Below a half moon, on a snowbound night, high on a hill in the town of Littleton, an unexpectedly large man with an overturned bucket of tangled hair stepped into the lobby of the Hampton Inn.
He was this, like, big, burly, strong guy.
For the hotel's night manager, Kristen Burkholder, it was hard to tell whether it was a damaged hip or knee that made the man's limp so pronounced. Burkholder noticed that the man's two front teeth were missing, that part of his right ear was gone.
He said that he travels with a Santa Claus costume, and if we wanted him to, he'd be happy to hang out in the lobby for an hour and read stories to the kids.
There wasn't any time to make an announcement or put up signs, and Burkholder still isn't sure why. She finally agreed to let the strange man sit in her hotel lobby.
I'm kind of thinking, oh my gosh, Santa's about to show up and this may backfire.
The man disappeared. He dressed in crimson robes and coal black boots. He tucked his wild hair into his Santa wig and drew the white hair down to cover his damaged ear and fixed a plate into his mouth so that Santa would have two front teeth. Red cap in place, he slung a bag full of toys over his shoulder and limped into the lobby.
But he sat down, and all of a sudden, within minutes, there was a line of kids just, you know, patiently waiting to sit on his lap and tell him what they want for Christmas.
Come on over here. Would you like to climb up here?
There you go. Yeah.
Hey. Are you looking forward to Christmas?
Yeah, and I saw Johnny.
You saw Johnny?
The owl.
Oh, where did you run into Johnny?
He went in our wreath.
Oh, he went in your wreath, though. That's a good place for an elf, right?
Yeah.
He was so great. He was so, like, he was such a nice guy, super interactive, very patient, very friendly.
None of the children and none of their parents knew who the man in the red suit was. That once upon a time, he'd been a kind of nightmare to kids all over the world. But by the time the line had cleared, one of the hotel staff had figured out Santa's real identity.
I have to get your autograph because my daughter's a wrestler.
Santa puts a shushing, secret finger to his lips.
Sorry, she was a wrestler, and she would love...
What's her name?
Carrie.
How do you spell that?
C-A-R-R-I-E. She would love it.
Weighing 287 pounds.
He was born Mick Foley on Long Island, New York. His manifestations as Dude Love and Cactus Jack are infamous. But none are more deranged than Mankind.
It was 1996 when Mick Foley belted a Hannibal Lecter mask over his face and stepped into the ring as Mankind, one of the darkest, most unhinged, most controversial, and most successful characters in professional wrestling history. The same year Mankind was born, 1996, Mick Foley visited Santa's Village in Jefferson, New Hampshire.
I was probably 16 or 17 when Mick first came to the park.
Christian Gaynor runs Santa's Village with his sister and brother-in-law. A third-generation owner, Gaynor's grandparents opened the park in 1953, and he grew up here.
You know, he was a WWE superstar. He was the guy on TV. I didn't approach him at all. I was like half a dozen other employees, and we're just kind of following around, seeing what he did. And from place to place, all of our employees would get excited and ask him questions about wrestling and wrestling Hulk Hogan and all the other big names of the WWE. But as his day kept on going, he kept on getting more inspired by the park and by the enthusiasm of our employees, and it just created a buzz for everybody, and there's been no turning back since.
I think I was able to explore that darker side because I had the yearly visits to this place. I honestly feel like that helped me cope, that I could really be convincing in my bad guy mannerisms, because I had a really nice counterbalance in the, you know, in the joy of Christmas.
Every year he's here unannounced. He shows up. He's part of the family. We welcome him with open arms and his whole family.
As a matter of fact, it was on that roller coaster there climbing the peak, that my daughter, who in 1998 would have been 4, kissed me on the cheek. And when I asked her what that kiss was for, she said, "Because you're a good man." And slightly more than 24 hours later, I was thrown off a massive steel structure by The Undertaker. And so after all these years, one of the great questions I have is, what in the world was I doing at Santa's Village the day before the biggest match of my career?
Not only the biggest match in his career, Hell in a Cell is considered one of the great events in WWE history, and saw Mankind being thrown not once, but twice from a height of 16 feet. The first fall was highly planned and well practiced, but the second, which knocked him unconscious, was an accident. The injuries he sustained during Hell in a Cell hastened the end of his formal wrestling career in 2000.
But yeah, I just remember that. Going up there, kissing me on the cheek, telling me I was a good man.
Does that create any kind of conflict for you when you think about those two things together?
I don't. Not a conflict. I mean, it's a great paradox. Yeah. But I learned to live with it.
In 1999, during an autograph session, Foley got the sense that his days as Mankind were coming to an end, and that another character, maybe his last, was preparing to emerge.
And off in the distance, about halfway through this massive line, I saw this little boy with the telltale scars of many, many surgeries for severe burns.
Foley called the boy up to the front of the line.
But it was then that his mother told me that Antonio had needed to wear a mask during the process of his healing. At the time, he was 3, and like most 3-year-olds, wanted nothing to do with the wearing of a mask, until his mother told him that his favorite wrestler, Mankind, wore a mask. And it kind of filled me with this sense of joy. It was almost like I could feel my conscience calling out to me. And so I asked his mom if he could sit on my lap while I took care of the rest of the people in line. And people were visibly moved. Like, there were people wiping away tears. And as he walked away, I got this distinct feeling that I knew what it was like to be Santa Claus. And a distinct feeling that this was something I would like to experience again.
And so he did. After visiting Sierra Leone in 2008, Foley funded construction of a large primary school there, which was completed in 2009. In 2011 alone, as a volunteer for the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, Foley logged more than 550 hours talking to victims. Following Hurricane Sandy, Foley gave his dining room furniture to a Long Island family who'd lost theirs in the storm. He then promptly invited himself over for dinner, so he could eat at his old table one last time. In 2012, it became official.
I have an official ambassador's letter that proclaims me an official ambassador, so that anytime I put on the red suit, I am officially known as Santa Mick.
Foley was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2013. He knew exactly how he wanted to go out. Exactly how he wanted to leave his fans.
I tried to talk Mr. McMahon into allowing me to exit Madison Square Garden on a sleigh flying into the sky. And I knew he had the capability of making it happen. He just didn't understand why it was so important to me.
And so, below a half moon, on a snowbound night, high on a hill in the town of Littleton, an unexpectedly large man with an overturned bucket of tangled hair stepped into the lobby of the Hampton Inn.
And you, young man, what would you like for Christmas?
Maroon catching gear.
Maroon catching gear. I can do that.
None of the children and none of their parents knew who the man in the red suit was. They called him Santa, and they knew inside him lay all the goodness and all the care and all the mystery and hope. Inside him, the single, simple majesty we believe exists in the very heart of all of mankind. For word of mouth, and yes, Virginia, there is a Mick Foley. This is Sean Hurley.